Pipe me through to the boss.
They're in the OTV now, said the communications technician.
I know that, Van Buren snapped. Get him!
The comtech stared up at her. Van Buren never lost her temper.
How can it be so hot all of a sudden? Asked Irv Lamont. One minute it's nice. All of a sudden it's like August.
86-year-old Lamont was playing chess at the sidewalk cafe with Cass Bernadillo, his friend of 60-some years. Bernadillo looked up from the chessboard.
Clouding up. We might get a shower.
The weather forecast was for sunny and mild, Lamont grumbled.
The weather forecast, what do they know? Remember last February? I had to shovel 4 inches of sunny and mild off my driveway.
You should have moved to a condo, Lamont said. Let them do the outside work.
I've lived in that house for 53 years. The only way I'm going to leave is feet first.
Lamont made a sour face at his old friend. Then he ran a hand inside his shirt collar.
Christ, it's hot.
Let's go inside the restaurant. It's air-conditioned inside.
They always keep it too cold.
So you want to broil yourself out here?
Lamont started to answer, but collapsed over the chessboard, scattering the pieces to the sidewalk. Bernadillo slumped in his chair and slid to the pavement, too. Half a dozen people walking along the street keeled over. A car slammed into a light pole, and then a city bus careened into a line of parked cars with a screeching, rending, tearing of metal. People screamed, and more fell, dead and dying. Al-Bashir's eyes were riveted to the television screen. The President of the United States was getting out of his long black limousine, smiling at the crowd of people lining his path to the dais where he would deliver his speech and then present a ceremonial ring of flowers at the Tomb of the Unknowns.
"The beam isn't there!" he shouted without taking his eyes from the screen. "It's not there yet!"
The Egyptian, standing behind one of the seated technicians, said,
"It isn't easy to move that huge satellite. This has to be done carefully, delicately."
"Get the beam on its target," Al-Bashir insisted.
"It's moving across the city. Give us a few more minutes."
Al-Bashir tried to control his impatience. "A few more minutes won't hurt. Let him begin his speech. Strike him down in the middle of his oration. Let the whole world see him broiled alive, him and his lackeys around him." Then he smiled to himself. "In a few minutes, half an hour at most, it will be done. Then I go upstairs for my reward. I deserve a reward for this. She'll be mine whether she wants to be or not."
Jane Thornton took her place beside Senator Quill as the President glad-handed his way along the line of VIPs waiting beneath the long plastic awning. Everyone put on their best smiles for the cameras. Every time Jane saw the President, she was struck by how small he was. Strange, she thought. American presidents tend to be either six-footers or little bantam cocks. Washington, Lincoln, even Reagan were all tall men. Teddy Roosevelt wasn't all that tall, but he was dynamic, energetic. This president was at least 2 inches shorter than Jane, even in the elevator shoes that everyone in Washington knew he wore. She smiled down at him as he took her hand. He smiled back warmly while the cameras clicked away.
"I ought to thank you, Jane."
"Me, Mr. President?"
"Sure. You're pushing Scanwell into a first ballot nomination."
"I'm certainly trying."
"Great. You think he can beat an incumbent president? I'll whoop his ass in November. I'm looking forward to it."
Without letting her smile slip 1 millimeter, Jane said,
"Good luck, then. You'll need it."
"I hear you might be his vice presidential choice," the president added.
Jane murmured,
"You have long ears."
"Take the slot if he offers it to you. Then I'll whoop your sweet little ass, too. That'll be even more fun."
The orbital transfer vehicle looked like a barbell-shaped ocean buoy encrusted with barnacles. Designed to operate in space and never come back to Earth, it did not need to have a sleek aerodynamic shape like the space plane. Its exterior was studded with antennas, toolkits, grappling arms, and life support packs. Inside, it resembled a sardine can. Built to hold 10 space-suited people,
It seemed jammed to bursting with only the seven of them standing in it. No seats. They weren't necessary in zero gravity. Dan's team stood with their boots slipped into fabric foot loops fastened to the metal decking. Adair stood up at the front of the circular cabin, his attention on the beeping, flickering readout screens surrounding him, rather than the curving window of thick quartz glass in front of him. Dan stood just behind him, peering out that window. It was black out there, as deep and dark as infinity. Only a few very bright stars could be seen through the quartz's heavy tinting. "Rendezvous with the Beast in 8 minutes," Adair called out. Like the spaceplane, the cabin of the OTV was pressurized. The crew could lift the visors of their helmets and breathe the air the vehicle stowed in its internal tanks. It was a small luxury, but Dan felt glad of it. 8 minutes, he thought. Then the work begins. For now, the seven men and women simply stood there with nothing to do but wait. There was no sensation of motion. They didn't even sway in their foot anchors. "Getting a flash from Matagorda," Adair said. "On two." Dan touched the stud on his wristband that activated radio frequency two. "This is Dan," he said. A crackle of electronic hash in his helmet earphones, then,
"Van Buren here. Our monitors show the magnetrons have come back on, but White Sands still isn't getting any power."
Dan felt his brows knit. That doesn't make any sense. A fraction of a second's delay, just enough to make him realize he was nearly 22,000 miles away.
"And the satellite's been moved,"
she added, her voice edging up a notch.
"Moved? Somebody's repositioning it, and it isn't us."
"Away from White Sands?"
"Right."
"To where?"
"We're trying to figure that out."
"Get on it, right away."
"We're on it, Chief."
"Call me the instant you figure out where it's being pointed."
"Right."
Van Buren clicked off. "Hey," Adair hollered. "I can see the Beast." Dan followed the astronaut's pointing arm, and there it was. A thin, flat square hanging against the black of space, its edges glowing in sunlight. They were coming up from below the power sat. Dan saw the rows of box-like structures and domes that housed the inverters and magnetrons and other equipment. Down at the end, as far from the output antenna as possible, was the dome for the satellite's control systems. There was a docking port next to it. That was where Adair was aiming the OTV. A glint of light caught his attention. Leaning forward, one hand on Adair's back to steady himself, Dan peered out the window and saw a long, slim, metallic object floating off a few hundred yards from the power sat, rotating slowly, catching the sunlight as it spun.
"That's the output antenna," he shouted.
"Geez, boss,
I think you're right," said Adair. "How did it get loose?"
"Beats me."
"Swing us up toward that end of the satellite," Dan commanded. "I want to see what's happened up there." Matagorda Island, Texas.
"Looks like the East Coast. Maybe Washington," said the technician.
Van Buren was tugging nervously on her strand of pearls, leaning over the seated man to study his console screen. "Washington," she muttered, and her mind raced. "The magnetrons are putting out power. Some son of a bitch has moved the satellite out of its normal position. They're pointing it at Washington. The beam's too diffuse to hurt anybody, but..."
She straightened up and yelled across the row of consoles to the communications tech, "Get Dan on the horn right away!"
By the time she had rushed to the comm console, she could hear Dan's voice. "What have you got?"
"Dan, this is just preliminary. We don't have it nailed down all that firmly yet, but I think they've moved the beam to Washington."
There was a tiny lag, just long enough to be noticeable. Then Dan exploded.
"Jesus Christ on a motorcycle!"
"It's all right, Dan," Van Buren said, unconsciously fingering her pearls.
"The beam's too diffuse to do any damage."
Again the lag. Then Dan's voice answered tightly, "Maybe not."
"What do you mean?"
"Somebody's removed our antenna from the power sat and put up a different one."
"What?"
Van Buren's necklace broke, pearls clattering all over the control center's tiled floor.
"It's an Astral Corporation craft," said Williamson. "I can see the logo they've slapped on her side."
"Have they seen us?" Bucciacci asked, alarmed.
"Dunno. Maybe."
The two men were huddled in their own transfer vessel, still in their spacesuits. Williamson had shoved Nikolaev's body out the hatch so Bucciacci wouldn't have to